another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Mark.
This is Matt.
As always, our names never change.
No.
Because that would be weird.
Just our underwear.
Yes, so hopefully. And welcome to everyone to the show, and welcome to people listening on Ironic Radio, WBLZmedia.com. We are on there every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, which is 3 to 5 for you Eastern folks.
Yes.
And we always have our new episode the first hour and a classic episode in the second hour, and we thank you all for listening to that. And make sure you go follow those guys on Twitter and check out WBLZmedia.com and check out the other great shows on Ironic Radio. I'm very proud to be on that, and it's been fun so far, but has it been real? I think it's real.
It's real. I think it feels real.
I listened to it. I turned in to our own shows because I'm self-serving like that, and it was real.
Yeah. I check in as much as I can now that I'm like, you know, I have to, you know, basically retrain with someone. It's like my Wednesday schedules are crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, go. It's, you know, there's a good mix of shows on there.
Yeah. It's a lot of sports stuff, just kind of talk show stuff. I think there's a show about like relationships. And
then yeah.
There's ours and our friends at the Critical Thinking Podcast. Miguel and those guys are on there too. So a lot of good shows in there. So check out WBLZmedia.com. I feel like Howard Stern, like WWB, you know,
WWB.
And remember when the his boss tells him in the movie, like, you have to say it with some, so, and he makes fun of it. And they get mad at him. You know, it's like WBLZmedia.com.
Yes. And Body Parts, was it
was that the name of his movie? Private Parts.
Yeah. Private Parts.
Yeah. All I remember is the girl and the speaker.
Yes.
That's really all I ever took out of that movie.
He's like, making the bass voice.
Oh, it's ridiculous. So your week's been, you started a new position at your job. So
yeah.
I'm sure that's not that thrilling.
But not that thrilling. I had some change of off days, which I kind of liked my days off during the week. You know, I had 2 days off. During the week.
You only work 4 days a week. You have to work five now, God forbid.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're a real person now.
I have to actually do stuff now, really. It's like before, I only had to do stuff if people didn't show up. But now I have to do stuff all the time.
I have no sympathy for you.
I know. No, but I do have weekends and holidays off, so that's nice.
So you have a three-day weekend?
Yeah, I have a three-day weekend this week, and I don't get any phone calls on the weekend. None. My supervisor's like, yeah, I just let my phone die. And going into the weekend, she's like, if anyone needs me, they have my personal number. And I'm like,
right.
Wow, you're pretty, like, cool.
That's good. I have to work Monday, but that's okay. It's extra money. I don't care.
Yeah.
Hey,
I would work it if it was extra money. Yeah. I'll hustle it.
And, like, Labor Day, what is it anyway? I mean, it's nothing. It's like it's like the beginning of the fall holiday no one cares about, really. You know, kids are back in school. It's like, whatever, you know.
It's there. It's something to give us a holiday in between 4th of July and Thanksgiving.
Well, don't sell Halloween short.
That's, you know, true.
Not that
I took the whole week off of Halloween.
I'm taking vacation that week too.
Taking actually. That. Yeah.
Because man, I'm hoping our Astros in the World Series again.
Oh, that would be awesome.
You know, so that's why I'm taking that week off. But anyway, so that's about. I haven't really had anything exciting this week. I haven't didn't start a new job or anything. I'm still in the same fucking shitty job. And I don't know if any of my coworkers listen to the show. I'm sure some of them do, but they understand where I'm coming from.
Yes.
Sometimes that place just makes you want to rip all your fucking hair out and just into. See, now it's got me cussing. That place gets me cussing.
You know? If you rip it out and turn it into a toupee, you could turn it over for profit.
Yeah, my boss is bald. Maybe I could put it on his head.
You could.
Yeah.
And mix some of your pubic hairs in there.
like Jackass style.
Yes.
Hey, man, I made you a beard.
Oh, man.
Well, are we ready to get into it? I think we're ready.
I think we're ready.
As we always, we start the show with Download This, where we tell you what we've streamed, watched, downloaded lately to our phones, our video game systems, or whatever. So, Matt, what have you watched this week, downloaded, checked out in your spare time, which probably wasn't much this week with kids back? I know your oldest went back to school, too, and your new having to work job. Sorry.
Yeah. This week I was lucky to have Monday off because I was coming off of another vacation. And
a man with like 20 weeks off.
Yeah, friggin' 20 weeks of vacation. And I decided that I was going to start flipping channels, just seeing what was on. And The Wrestler was on. And I had never really seen The Wrestler. I knew that Marissa Tomei got nude in it. So I looked up just that one part, and that's it. But I decided to actually watch it this time.
It's funny. I've never watched it. Aronofsky is an interesting director. Like, his movies aren't for everyone.
Right.
But, like, yet his one movie, The Fountain with Hugh Jackman, is one of my favorite movies I've ever watched. But like, I hated Black Swan. Mm-hmm. Not a huge fan of Pi. But so how is The Wrestler though? I've heard it's more accessible, that I might like it.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely would. I mean, his name's Randy the Ram, and he's this kind of like a local wrestler, but he was really big in the 80s, and you know, he basically abandoned his daughter at that time, and he has a heart attack, and he's told that, you know, hey, you can't wrestle anymore, and he's older, you know, it's like in his 50s, but he's still going out there and doing it, and he decides that, you know, maybe he needs to take some time off, and he's going to try and get to know his daughter, but, you know, his daughter feels like she abandoned him, or he abandoned her, and he doesn't want anything to do with it, and he befriends the stripper, Marissa Tomei, and she is smoking hot in that movie. I mean, she's, what, I think she was like 42 or 43 whenever she made that film,
yeah.
And you can hardly tell, but... You know, he kind of falls for her, but she doesn't mess with customers.
All right.
And so he does really good, and he gets back into his daughter's life, and then things start falling apart again. And, you know, he decides that, you know, he's going to go party it up. And he does some like cocaine, and he bangs this young girl that remembers a poster on her brother's wall of him. And she's like, let's party. And she makes him snort cocaine. And then he bangs her in the bathroom. It's friggin' hilarious. And it's, you know, he lets down his daughter. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go out like, you know, how I want. And he's going to wrestle. And he wrestles at the end. And it's pretty cool. He has to get a job at the deli counter at one point, and it's just, it kind of, if you've ever worked retail,
yeah,
it kind of gives you a sense of, man, I know how this guy's feeling, because he kind of gets frustrated with his job.
I've heard Rourke is very good in it
too, Rourke is really good.
I think he might have been Oscar, I may remember right, I don't know, I'd have to I go think back so. And look, but yeah. Yeah.
It could be a show-worthy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
We'll see.
Kind of weird. Aronofsky movies are really weird. Like, I think...
It was filmed like a documentary almost.
I think if I was to cover one of his movies for the show, I think The Fountain's the most accessible.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of sci-fi-ish fantasy.
Yeah. You know?
But, yeah. Pi is really weird.
Yeah, Pi is weird.
Black Swan was just like, what?
You know? Yeah. Except for that scene where, you know, the girls are...
Yeah, that was right. Now it worked. That's all you watched really this week in your extra time?
That's all I really watched. Yeah. I mean, I worked a lot this week. So,
oh, God forbid.
Yeah. Well, if you know, friends who don't know, and if you like sports, I do work for the Texans. I work for the McNairs. So I was at the Dallas game this Thursday. And then this Saturday, I was working the Texas Tech and Ole Miss game, which unfortunately Texas Tech got beat. U of H won. Longhorns lost.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Longhorns.
I thought they were going to come back, but
yeah, no,
you know,
I'm not.
College football is alive, and yeah. We'll see how the season plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch much this week either with work and school starting, so I'm not getting home till a bit later. And yeah. Michael's got football 2 days a week, but I did last night sat and watched Alien Covenant finally.
Oh yeah,
I hadn't seen this, which is weird for me to not have gone and seen an Alien movie. And I was in Half Price Books, and they had it for $3 on clearance. I'm like, you know what, for $3, fuck it. I didn't hear great things about it, but for $3 I'll give it a chance. And so I sat down last night and watched it, and it's weird because it's almost hard to believe that this is Ridley Scott directing this, because it's definitely weirdly paced. Mm-hmm. Prometheus was very much like Aliens, very slow paced, but yet it had this genius build to it to see what was going to happen. Now, we all know the payoff in Prometheus wasn't what we wanted.
Right.
But overall, I really liked the movie up until the end of it. And mm-hmm. and this was felt more like, it felt a bit like a rushed product. Like, it's weird. It's not edited as well. The scenes are quick. It takes a bit to get going. And you saw it, you said, right?
Yeah.
And then the execution of ideas, I know there's been a lot of... Now, I have no... I'm not stuck on the Alien universe. Like, I have no way to say whether I agree with what they do or not. I'm not that attached to the universe, but I guess hardcore Alien fans didn't like the changes made in this, like the facehuggers, and we're out of spoiler free zone on this. Everyone's been out a while. and the face huggers implant quicker, and then they jump off the face. Next thing you know, the chest is bursting out. And people say they changed that and how quickly the alien grows, especially the one that's planted on the ship at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it grows full grown real fast. And people say they complain about that. To me, that didn't really bother me. It was more the last 20 minutes. They throw these twists at you that are like, what, what, what? And it's like that whole execution of ideas was really just, it was weird. Mm-hmm. It was almost too much in the last 20 to 30 minutes. And it threw the movie off for me. I didn't hate it. I don't think it's great. It looks good. It's a good-looking movie.
Yeah.
But it's better than Resurrection, which is a turd on a stick.
Yeah, it is better than Resurrection.
But I bought it because it's only $3, and it completes my Alien collection. So it's better than Resurrection. It's probably not better than 1, 2, or 3. You know, it's no. Or better than Prometheus. I'd probably put it fifth best. If I was to rank the Alien movies real quick, obviously Aliens is one. Alien is 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people might argue with me on this, but I would maybe put Prometheus 3, Alien 3, 4, and Alien Covenant 5. Alien 3 and Prometheus kind of flip-flop. I like them for different reasons. Alien 3 is kind of cool because the whole prison, the alien.
Yeah.
But it's a really weak story, where Prometheus might have a weak ending, but it's a strong story and amazing set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of flip-flop those. But Alien Covenant... Hey, I'm not going to complain. $3 to watch it. You know, what
not
the hell?
Bad.
And
cheaper than a movie ticket. Alien.
Yeah, it was only on clearance at half price because it was a combo pack. It was missing the DVD.
Okay.
I don't care. As long as I had the Blu-ray in it, you know. The digital code was still in there, but it didn't work.
Man. Man, I'm going to have to do some more shopping at half price books.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. You know,
I feel like I go there every once in a while, and every time I go there, I find something cool, and I'm like, why don't I go here
more
often?
It's my favorite store, man. I can always find a treasure there. Almost every time I go, I find something, a movie, something rare, something cool. It's definitely a store that's worth checking out.
Last time I was there, I bought a cassette of John Denver's Greatest Hits.
Why?
Because, okay, it's whenever we did Boy Scout trips, and we drove... my dad drove like 18 hours to Colorado. We played John Denver, and it's like he would always make the joke that John Denver is full of shit, you know, from Dumb and Dumber.
I get it, but still, a John Denver cassette and a cassette at that.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's all the Sequoia plays right now. I still have yet to get the CD player.
Wait, how old is that car?
It's a 2001, man. It's a 17-year-old vehicle.
It has a cassette player in it?
It has
still?
A cassette player. Because at that time, it was kind of like whenever VCRs were ending and DVDs were being popular, you have the combo ones all the time. And it's got the combo player.
But the CD player doesn't work.
The CD player don't work. It got jammed. I think.
But yet the cassette player still works.
Yeah, it's still kicking, man. Cassette player is still kicking, wow. Dude.
Cassette player. That's old.
Yeah, man.
Like older than Frank.
It is older than Frank. Frank, he farts dust.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for download. That, I can't talk for download this. Well, let's get into today's movie. It's a cult classic, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
We're talking Monty Python and the Holy Grail from 1975. As I talked in the preview last week, this is a movie that I wasn't super familiar with. I knew what Monty Python is. I had seen clips and the famous scenes, but I imagine I at some point had sat down and watched this. I just didn't retain it.
Yeah.
So I can't really say when my first time I really watched this was. Probably on TV years ago. But it's not something that stayed with me.
Comedy Central would frequently air this one. And I used to catch my dad watching it every so often. And all I would ever remember is the Black Knight and the fake horse galloping sound.
Yeah. And which is, of course, a couple of the famous moments. And and we'll talk about that in a minute. There's actually a couple of scenes that I think are funnier than that scene, but
that's
the scene that gets the famous moment.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm very picky when it comes to comedy. I like fart humor, dick humor, Kevin Smith films. And this movie, our buddies at the Thorskin podcast, Alex is going to probably trash me like this, but... Man, British humor, I don't fucking get, man. It's like, what? The jokes drag on, and they do in this movie. And I went on, and I watched it without reading anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to count this as my first full experience. And it's not first full experience of Monty Python, because I've seen Flying Circus, and I've seen things. But I gave it a chance, but then I went back and read some critic things about this, and I agree with everything they say. The jokes sometimes drag on for 10 minutes, so you lose interest in the joke, and then the punchline's dropped, and you're like...
You miss it.
It's that dry humor that you have to think about what happened, and like I'm like, I don't get it.
I feel like that happens in the beginning more. I think once you get past the beginning and everyone splits up and goes on their own journey, then it gets a whole lot funnier. But you kind of have to get through this almost, it was almost like listening to a second language for me whenever he's talking to the two people complaining about how King Arthur became king.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I never voted for you. And then I'm like, they're talking, you know, English so fast. Right. I'm like, what?
and before we get too far, in case people don't know, Monty Python is a famous comedy troupe from the 1970s, and they had a television show on called Monty Python's Flying Circus. And it was basically sketch comedy, like Saturday Night Live, short skits and things like that. And they spin it off into a movie. Yeah. And this movie is basically a spoof on King Arthur as they're hunting for the Holy Grail. And he's trying to put together the Knights of the Round Table. And just when he's about to give up, they get called by God to search for the Holy Grail.
Yes.
And it's very low budget. It's like only $400,000. But yet it made a lot of money at the box office. In 1975, it was the most successful British film ever released here.
Yeah.
And so it's... There's no horses, as you mentioned, the coconut sounds,
because
they couldn't afford them.
Yeah.
So they use coconuts to make horse sounds. And they even... That was funny. And they even make... fun of them in the movie, like, you're using coconuts. She's like, no, I'm not. He's like, yes, you are. And they have this whole long spiel about why the coconuts.
Yeah.
And it's really...
How did you even get the coconuts? Well, I found them. How did you find them? And he's like, I'm trying to
ask you. Tropical climate.
Yeah. He's like, well, you must have been from a swallow. He's like, a European swallow, an African swallow.
and you're right. And they talk fast. You're trying to pick up on it. And I think that's, and then if the joke starts dragging more in a few minutes, you lose track of it.
Yeah.
And it does start out well. That opening scene with King Arthur and the coconut comet, that part's funny. And that part doesn't drag on too much. And it explains to you right at the beginning of the movie that there's no horses. This is what's going to happen. And the whole movie, they're trotting along like they're riding horses, and it's ridiculously stupid, but it works for some reason.
It's one of the most big, it's probably one of the most famous visual gags in comedy history. And that's one thing that you will always remember whenever someone says Monty Python. It's like someone just probably picks up two pieces of wood and starts clinking them together.
Right. So. And that's how the movie starts, with this immediate visual sight gag that's explained to you through birds and tropical climates, and you're like, what? So it makes no bones about it what you're getting into right away.
Yeah. It's, you know, even in the credits that are rolled in.
Oh, the opening credits,
and then it's like everything shuts down, and they're like, sorry, the people doing the credits have been sacked. And then the people that sacked the people... that made the credits have been sacked. And then everyone has been replaced with llamas.
And then they say something like, and we had a new company design credits, and it comes on with this like bright color 1970-ish. And let's be honest, this is probably a movie you should probably be really high to watch.
Oh, man, it would be freaking hilarious if you were high.
To get parts of it. I think that's why it became a cult classic, because I imagine guys sitting around smoking their bowls and going, man, that Monty Python shit's fucking funny, man. You know? So then the movie, after they is well, so so the famous scene happens pretty early on. As he's trying to search for his knights, he runs to a black knight who's like this, and you watch this badass fight between this other guy, and it kicks into like action movie mode for a few minutes.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty well choreographed fight that John Cleese and the other actor actually did themselves, because they couldn't afford stuntmen.
Yeah,
and so they learned to use the swords and film it, and it's a pretty cool scene. And the black knight kills the green knight. And they walk on, like, oh, okay, fight's over. So they try to pass through. He's like, you cannot pass. And he's like, but we must. And he goes, and so King Arthur's like, oh, fuck it, whatever, I'll fight you. So he fights him, and this is the famous scene.
Yes, A cuts off one arm. It's merely a flesh wound. He's like, a flesh wound? You're missing your arm. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Well, have at me, you coward. And he's like hitting him with one arm, cuts off the other arm. And then he cuts off a leg. And it cuts off the other leg, and this guy will not stop fighting. And they dig a hole in the ground so that Gleese can fit in the ground.
Well, and they use two different actors in that part.
Yeah.
Because Gleese filmed the Black Knight, And then they had a guy who literally had only one leg came in and did some of the hopping scenes because they couldn't figure out a way to cover up his leg.
That's right. That's right.
And rumors for years were that they buried they put the hole in the ground for the guy with one leg, and John Cleese eventually, most recently, came out and said, no, that's me in the dirt. You know, my leg's in the dirt.
And that's him in the dirt, and he's trying to get him as a torso. as a torso. It's funny, whenever he has no arms and he's like trying to kick him.
And he kicks him on the ground.
Yeah, man. Oh man, it starts off with some good, some strong humor, and very iconic stuff.
And that's where this movie works, is those short funny scenes. But there's a lot of dialogue style scenes that drag on and on and on. It's just like, like I said, I was reading about critics, and they said the same thing, that you have long 10-minute jokes that take forever to develop, and it loses the attention of the viewer. And that's very much how I felt watching it. Like, this is funny, but it's not funny at the same time. And I didn't hate this movie, but I didn't love it either. I think it's okay. I think it's very much a product of its time. You kind of have to grow up watching it. But we'll talk more about that in a little bit. So then the movie goes on, and he eventually gets all of his knights together after God calls him. And
which is a famous cricket player.
Right. Yeah. And they use like this, they use rotoscoping to do like a fake animation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it branches off into like individual little adventures in very much Monty Python style, where each knight has their own separate quest as they're trying to find the Grail.
Yes.
And it's not really explained why. It just sort of happens.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden you have individual adventures for each knight.
Yeah. I could have sworn that there was a thing. Well, no, maybe I read that they split up so that they could, you know, spread more ground.
Right.
But
I think maybe so, but it's real briefly explained.
Briefly explained. You're right. And it starts off with Sir Robin, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it starts off with Sir Robin, and just the song is just friggin' hilarious. Brave Sir Robin, he'll face the task even though he's going to get gout and have his heart cut out on his knees. And he's like, whoa, what? He's like, stop singing.
Yeah, and then the singers follow him around the whole time. And he keeps telling them to shut up. Like, he's like, stop, I hate this, you know?
and then they come to the three-headed man, who is, of course, Gleese and the two Terrys, right? Gleese and the two Terrys.
They all play multiple parts of the movie. I think one of the actors plays 12 different parts. Yeah.
Yes, and they even have each one. Yeah, some played 12 parts, but overall everyone averaged about 8. Mm-hmm. That's just the average, and they even have Gleese made a joke about it one time being interviewed, and he talked about how he was being driven on set by a driver, and they had used the driver as an extra, and he's like, how many parts have you played? And he goes, 11. And he's like, oh, wow. He's like, yeah, I'm really trying to hit 15. And he's like, you know, it's a good film when you have someone playing 15 parts. And so, just like, other parts of the film, they had family members come in. But,
right.
Yeah, it's funny how they got it, financed and used, which Pink Floyd helped finance this film.
Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. And today, it would be about 1.7 to $2 million estimated is what the film costs. So, I mean, we've talked about, budgets before. That's barely enough to pay for advertising nowadays.
And they did a lot of the costumes. They used stuff that they already had in the Monty Python archives from the TV show, and they redid some of the stuff, and they found some wool for cheap. So they made the costumes out of wool and stuff like that and painted on them. And a lot of the shields were just made of wood they had found and things like that, and the swords.
And the castle, probably the biggest prop. It was a big prop, and they even made a joke about it because they went and they scouted all these castles, and then they were told they couldn't film in them.
And it's funny because they film it at different angles, but it's the same castle in every scene.
Yes.
But they used it multiple times for each guy's adventure with the different castles they went to.
Yes. The other one, the one you see from afar, is actually a model, which Gleese's character actually makes a reference to. He's like, it's just a model. And the author's like, shut up.
And then there's the funny scene. Was it Lancelot who goes to the castle and has all the girls?
Galahad goes.
Yeah, Galahad.
But Lancelot rescues him, quote unquote. And at first, Sir Galahad is just like, don't touch me.
And it's very... We've done these older movies before that have this taste of the 70s, and this is very much... a 70s free love scene. And it's funny because if that came out now, there's no way it gets a PG. And there's nothing bad in the scene, but the dialogue's very PG-13.
Oh, yes.
Even though it's tongue-in-cheek.
He's like, I saw the Grail from afar. And he's like, it was a light. And she's like, oh, my, it was a light. Oh, it was, I forget who it was. She names her, but we're going to have to punish her. It's like, oh, how do you punish her? We strap her down and then you'll spank her. And then you'll do whatever you want to her afterwards. And then you can spank me. And then another girl's like, yeah, and you can spank me. And then they're like, you can spank all of us and all of us will be spanked. And then we can start with the oral sex. And then she's like, what? And that's when Lancelot busts in and is like, don't worry, sir, we've got you. And they're like, we'll save you from these sirens, these seductresses. And he's like, no, let me face this peril alone. He's like, no, this is too much peril. He's like, I don't know, I'd like a fair amount perilous. Of peril. I'm supposed to face a large amount of peril every day. And they drag him out of there. And he shouldn't have been such a prude when he got there. Otherwise, it would have been like an Austin Powers moment.
Right. And it's funny because as we're sitting here talking about this movie's so much funnier to talk about. When I'm watching it, like, it's like I said, you don't really laugh because you're like, oh, that was supposed to be funny. But it takes so long to get to that point. It works better in short bursts. And one part I did really think was funny was the Knights of Knee part.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was funnier than the Black Knight because they're like, we're the Knights of Knee. They freak out every time they say the knee. And they're so ridiculous. They're like, we want a shrubbery. And they're like, a shrubbery? It's just a fucking bush. Yes. They just want a nice plant. And then they go through this massive quest to find this shrubbery. They find this old lady who they scare by going, knee. And they come back and they're like, oh, we're no longer the Knights of Knee. And it's like, we're what?
The Knights formerly known as Knee.
And then they eventually get past them, and it turns out they're not really scary. They're just these ridiculous guys in the woods who are trying to.
And they're like, well, now, you know, you completed the quest for the Knights of Knee. Since we're a new knight group, you're going to have another challenge. And they're like, bring us another shrubbery. And they're like, no, we will not. He's like, okay, then cut down a tree with this herring. And he hands them a fish. He's like, that's impossible.
Yeah, it's
oh man. And then Sir Robin pulls up, and I guess they don't like the word
with the singers following him.
With the singers following him, or it's like they don't like the word is or it.
Yeah.
And so they freak out and eventually let them go because they keep saying it all the time.
And then they get to the final challenge with the bridge and the old guy, and they have to answer these three questions, which are just like opinionated questions.
Yes.
Except for the last one, like, what's your favorite color? How's the thing know you're wrong or right?
You know? Exactly.
And he says his own question wrong, so it shoots the old guy off the bridge, and they're able to cross. So by the time Arthur gets to the Grail at the end, he's only got, like, him and one other knight left. They've all died.
Yes.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the crazy bunny rabbit.
Oh, yes, the bunny. So they borrow this bunny from a lady, like a pet shop. They borrow it from the pet shop. And I guess the lady was there on set, and they had to distract her while they basically lathered this bunny up in fake blood right. for this scene. And she was not very happy. It's nuts, man. This bunny just, like, bites off
a head. He rips the dude's head off. It's like, man. And it's funny, I'm watching this, and I don't remember that scene. I was like, whoa, wait, what? The bunny just tore off the guy's fucking head. It's like...
yeah, man, they had to wash that bunny off pretty good afterwards.
I'm sure.
It's funny how what they had to do because of the budget, and this was one of the things, borrowing the bunny. And then the famous old man from scene 24, of course, the old announcer that got his head cut off.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then you keep seeing British police in the film. Now, the original draft. It was supposed to start halfway in the medieval times, and then it was going to be in present time, and they were going to find the Grail, but it was going to be at a department store where you could buy it. And so that was going to be the ongoing joke.
And the whole police thing is kind of weird. Yeah. It's like, and then at the end of the movie, they show up to stop the battle and they arrest them, and you're like, it ends. The movie, yes. You're like, what?
Against the Frenchman, who has some of the best insults in the movie. I fought in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberry. He's like, yeah, and he calls them smelly Brits. And he's like, well, what are you? I am French. Don't you understand my accent? My ridiculous accent.
And then another famous scene is where John Cleese plays the Enchanter, and yes. he swears that he didn't improvise, because there's been kind of come a group thing over the years where they all say they improvise, but most comedies, things are ad-lib. These guys had it, and he goes, my name is, and he thinks about Tim.
They call me Tim.
And he's, and it's just such an odd name. And he was actually, the camera angle doesn't show it, but behind him, there's nothing. He's literally standing like if he had fallen, he could have died. And he said the wind was real strong, and he's standing on this rock and everything. And he said in between takes, he'd have to, not that there were a lot of takes because they were low budget, but he had to squat down so that the wind didn't blow him over.
Oh, my God.
And everything. And he said that was the most dangerous scene he did, is playing Tim the Enchanter.
Almost died while playing the Tim the Enchanter, yeah. who liked sparking fireballs everywhere. That's crazy.
And I don't even remember why they were at the Enchanter. What, there was a reason there.
Yeah,
they were looking for something. Yeah, at that they point.
Had, it was supposed to. The answer to the Holy Grail was supposed to be in this cave.
Oh, that's where the bunny was.
And that's where the bunny was. And they're like, "Can you help us find this cave?" So he leads them to it.
And that's right.
Like,
he's ducking behind the rock. And yeah. He's like, "I'm not going over there." He's like.
And Sir King Arthur's like, are you serious? Go take care of the bunny.
Yeah, then he gets his head ripped off, and they're like, oh, it's just a bunny. We can all hit it. They'll go over there, and the bunny's ripping all their heads off.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And they run, and there's like only three of them left by that point.
And then they use the holy hand grenade.
Yes, which is referenced in Ready Player One. And my son actually noticed that. He's like, Dad, that's from Ready Player One. I go, yeah, that's where they got it from.
Yes.
And how is it used in this movie?
So they call for the holy hand grenade, and two monks bring it over, and they read from the scripture, thou shalt pull the pin and count to three, not to four, and not to five, but three. And so he's like, ah. And so he pulls the cross off the top, and he goes, one, two, five. And then one of the other guys is like, no, three. He goes, oh, yes, three. And he throws it over. And, of course, it blows the bunny up. it's like it was more epic in Ready Player One. But, of course, that's the video game world. Right. So it's all epic. But yeah, it was really cool to see that. And I had not noticed that before, obviously, because, you know, whenever, you know, you're younger and your dad's watching it, you're just kind of watching bits and pieces.
Right.
Especially whenever you don't really get the humor. But, too much then.
You know, as far as a lot of the movies we've covered on the show, this one, to me, maybe doesn't hold up as well as some other ones, because you have to put yourself into the movie.
Yeah.
It's very much a product of the 1970s, and we've done older movies before that hold up well today. This does hold up, but, like, you really have to put yourself in that mindset for it to hold up. I don't think it holds up as well as putting on, like, Planet of the Apes or Escape from New York, because they're more sci-fi, fantasy. This, you kind of have to put yourself in that time, put yourself in the comedy mind, and say, mm-hmm. This is supposed to be funny. This is a product of the 70s. It's definitely not 2000s comedy.
No.
You know, it's definitely a different type of comedy. It's very British.
Yeah, very British.
You know, but it's accessible, too, and that's why it did well for American audiences.
Yeah, and they did they chose the medieval times because they wanted something that they could really play off of and go in a different direction if they needed to. It's a loose storyline. You know, King Arthur, he has Knights of the Round Table searching for the Holy Grail. And they could kind of twist the script however they wanted to with that structure.
Right.
So that's why they went with the old time. Like, they had the script, like, written out after, like, just a few days. And then the two Terrys, Terry Gilliam, Terry Jones.
Yeah, they directed the film.
Which Terry Jones, he can't even speak now.
Right.
He had a frontal lobe cancer. So.
Well, they're all getting up there in Asia. Yeah. And Terry Gilliam's still making movies. He went on to make Brazil and The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. He's made a lot of really famous kind of epic movies that you know, went on to do.
And he was the animator. In fact, he dies in the film.
Right.
Because of the...
Yeah, there's little animated interludes in the film,
too. The monster of Arr.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. Because there's so much... It's like you lose the train of thought in the film, like the point of the film. And then now I'm losing my train of thought talking about the film. But, the two Terrys, they basically decided to scrap the whole thing, and they had like only 10% of the film original script is what they went off of, and they kind of like Now, it was cool having two directors, but it seemed like there was a lot of conflict on set.
Right.
Because they were used to, I guess the other guys were used to working with them, and now they had to take orders from them.
Right.
And it was kind of a rough movie to make.
It was probably a growing thing. You know, you're used to doing a comedy troupe together, and you did a TV show, and now all of a sudden you're having to work. You're changing the dynamic of things, I would imagine. And Terry Gilliam over the years has been known as not a actor's director. He's, his movies that he's done, people say he's very difficult to work with.
Yeah.
He's very hard. And maybe that's where that started, being a difficult director.
This could. And they thought, they thought that they could direct it better than Ian. I forget Ian's last name, who directed their first film in 1971, which is basically their show just kind of reskitted out.
Yeah.
But this one was a whole lot different. It was cinema. He tried to incorporate cinema aspects to it, and they didn't understand some of the things that he was doing. But because he'd have shots down from low and trying to make these wide shots, which I think he regrets some of the wider shots that he made, just because he didn't like the visual effect on some of the scenes. But it was a good learning experience for them, and their movies got better with Life of Brian.
Right.
Life of Brian is probably better than this film.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like I said, I didn't hate this film, didn't love it. I found it in the middle of the road. But it's just not necessarily for me. I didn't grow up in that time and everything. And I like I said, I like kind of more simple humor. But this movie does make a lot of top 10 lists. It's made a lot of top 5 comedies of all time.
Yep.
Life of Brian is usually above it by a couple of spots. Mm-hmm. But this is a very loved film. By a lot of people, they found this cult class, a lot of childhood favorites of people that grew up with it. I'm sure Alex and the guys at Thorskin probably are thinking, man, he's fucking Americans. I don't know what I'm talking about. That thing's a classic, and it is a classic. It's just not like, I personally am not going to probably put it in my top, maybe even 50 of all time movies. I think it's classic.
Yeah.
But that's just because it's not something I'd probably go access on purpose. Yeah,
that's like saying, I don't enjoy Casablanca, but it's a classic, film.
I've never watched The Godfather all the way through. I can't get into it. That's just me. I accept that it's a classic film, but I've tried watching Godfather a few times. 20 minutes into it, I'm bored as fuck. I just can't get into it.
Pull the trigger, walk away.
Yeah. But Monty Python, The Holy Grail is a fun movie, and I'm glad I watched it all the way through and added it to my library of films I've watched. It's worth checking out if you're really into comedy and sketch comedy.
And guys, if you have an Amazon account, it's an add-on item right now for like $4.49 for the extended special edition DVD. Not the Blu-ray, but the DVD. The Blu-ray is still like $20.
Yeah. Well, so it's worth checking out. If you're an aspiring comedian, Monty Python is obviously something that you'd have to watch and learn from. There's no doubt about that. So check out Monty Python, The Holy Grail, and we hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about it, too, I think. Any final thoughts on, or that was your final thoughts, the Amazon?
Oh, that was my final thoughts. It's like,
go buy the fucking movie.
Buy it. It's awesome. Pull it. I like.
And we get nothing from Amazon. We don't even have Amazon links on our website. So.
I just, we just use it a lot.
And, yeah.
You can take all those add-on items, and you don't have to just add on an item to a regular order. I thought that at first, which is why I would order, like, Mark would go on there whenever, sometimes we use each other's account, and it's like he would see, why'd you buy like paper towels, or why'd you buy this? It's like, you go to the store, and I'm like, it's add-on item for like $3, something that's normally like $5, and I was like, whatever. But now I found out that you can just add all the add-on items together. So you can find like some, DVDs maybe that you didn't have, and it's the regular DVD, not the Blu-ray, is like $5. You can add all those $5, $4 DVDs up, and as long as it equals $25, it's prime shipped to your house. You get it in 2 days.
All right. Good deal. So that's it on Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Well, we're not out of here yet. As always, we got things to talk about. It's been a really slow news week, but it always is. It's back to school and holiday. So let's talk some news real quick. In a minute, we're going to preview the fall movie season because there's a lot of movies coming out. DC Universe announced they're launching September 15th, new streaming service. I don't have the money right now. It's $75 for the year. You get 3 free months. That's not bad. It's $5 a month months. Titans is going to debut in October on there. I'm kind of waiting because I'm surely they're going to have a free trial, and I'm surely they're going to have a monthly
thing.
you know, I feel like I got to get this, even though I'm broke as fuck right now. I just feel like, man, it's DC. Are you going to check it out?
I want to, because they're supposed to have all the animated films on there, right?
Yeah, animated films, Batman the Animated Series, which is in remastered high definition, the old Wonder Woman TV series, comics you can read, all kinds of cool stuff.
That's really good. I mean, I know DC had a program through Kindle, I believe, where you could basically watch all of their, you know, look at all of their comics online. And, you know, if you scrapped that and then just did this, it's not that much more, and you're getting all these movies and shows for free. Or not for free, but for a little bit extra.
And I know it feels like we don't need more streaming services and stuff, but there's just some things, like, I don't really watch Hulu that much, but my wife does, so that's why I have Hulu. But I'm to the point where, like, this I might have to check out. It might be worth it, you know, and see what it's all about. You know, they're making this Spawn movie with Todd McFarlane directing, which Jamie Foxx starring. I guess Jeremy Renner's in it too. We've talked before. I want it to be successful, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But they did announce that Greg Nicotero, who's very known, very famous and known for his The Walking Dead, and he's going to design the Spawn suit.
Oh, wow.
I imagine that would be cool.
Yeah.
I mean, his Walking Dead stuff's great. Whether you love or hate the show now, 9 seasons in, there's no argument that Greg Nicotero has brought that show to life in so many good ways.
Mm-hmm.
And see him do the Spawn suit should be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than the CGI that we got back in the way back.
It's funny, like, it's so funny how you change 20 years later. I really liked that Spawn movie in 97. I watch it now and I'm just like, God, this is really fucking terrible.
Yes, the cape whenever he's in the ballroom or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just look friggin' epic. One of the most epic capes I've ever seen.
But now you realize, back, like, wow, like, this sucks.
Yeah, it's not as good.
You know, Tom Hardy let it be known that he's signed on for 3 Venom movies that's coming out in a couple weeks or in about a month. We're going to talk about that in our fall movie preview, but I guess that's good, but it's not really, I don't know why it's news. I guess that's kind of slow news week it's been, but yeah. I guess all these actors now that are signed on, but all I know is if we don't get Spider-Man versus Venom in this movie, we better get it in part 2.
Oh, absolutely. Hopefully they tease it a little bit and they use Tom Holland again.
Did you watch the Red Band trailer for Predator that came out?
I caught some of it.
Man, it looks cool, dude. Like, there's the Predator has the Predator. Dogs and stuff that he uses. And man, the more and more, I'm still not sure about the cast of human characters. They look kind of like that one dude, that black dude that's a comedian. Like, he's funny, but I see him in the trailer and he's just like out of place. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I'm just wondering how the dynamic will come together of the group. But the movie looks cool. I mean, I'm all for it. Shane Black's a cool director. Yeah. He's made some cool stuff. So we'll see how this comes out. It comes out in a couple weeks, and we may or might not be talking one of the Predator films on the show that week. That's a little early preview.
Yes.
And lastly, some more Star Wars Episode 9 casting. Dominic Monaghan, I think that's how you say it, from Lord of the Rings, and Matt Smith have been added to the cast. A couple of very good actors. Let's just hope that Matt Smith is used better in Star Wars than he was in Terminator Genesis.
Yeah.
But this is rounding out to be a really nice cast, as always. And I'm really... Last Jedi haters be damned. I love the movie, and I can't wait to see how J.J. Abrams brings it all together. This cast is looking remarkable. I think so far Disney has done a remarkable job with their casting and Lucasfilm. People say they don't like the new characters, which I don't see how. I think John Boyega and Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac have all done such a great job bringing new characters to life and bringing Star Wars to a new generation.
I think that's the big picture here, bringing Star Wars to a new generation and not letting it be, you know, an object of the 80s.
And
you know,
all these whiny bitches that are like, oh, they ruined my childhood. No, they didn't. You're grown up. They didn't ruin your childhood. And Disney's not even ruining it. Lucasfilm is in control. The films, man, keep them coming. Yeah, I can't wait to watch Solo again in a couple weeks when it hits Blu-ray. I'm so excited to watch it again. So more Star Wars, and principal photography just started a few weeks ago. But, you know, I imagine we're not going to get the first trailer until April at Star Wars Celebration.
Probably.
Which would make sense if it come out next December. So that's really all the news. Like I said, very slow news week. So let's talk some fall movies that are coming out. And it all, to me, starts here in a couple weeks with The Predator, which we just talked about.
Yes.
I think that's going to be, I hope it's really good.
It's got to be the kickoff to the fall. So it has to be good. I mean, I know it didn't, you know, we talked, I think, earlier in the year about how it didn't make the summer list.
Yeah, they pushed it back a little bit.
Yeah. But, you know, the trailer has me very optimistic. I thought this was... you know, going to be, you know, I guess the a failed attempt to revive, you know, a good, you know,
a good franchise, yeah. But needed a kick, another kickstart.
And so, yeah, I thought this was going to be a failed kickstart pretty much. But the trailer, it has me interested. I definitely would like to probably take Jake to go see it so Jake could have a good introduction to the Predator. It's not rated R, right?
It's going
to
be rated R.
Ah, darn it.
Watch the Red Band trailer. There's bodies getting ripped apart.
Okay, I need to watch that trailer. Yeah, he
probably shouldn't watch it.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, PG-13 I can get away with, but yeah, rated R. Yeah.
That's really the big one for September as far as movies we cover. Then October, we just talked about Venom comes out. Another movie that you got to be optimistic about. It looks really cool. The trailer's really cool. But how will it all come together and be executed?
I think automatically, I believe he's got to be better than Eric from that 70s.
Oh, yeah. I'm not worried about Tom Hardy at all. It's just the story and the film and tying all together. Is Carnage in it? Is he not? Who's Woody Harrelson playing? How's that all going to come together? Does Tom Holland cameo in it? Because it's funny, the director all of a sudden said, oh, I'm not saying whether Spider-Man's in it or not, which to me tells me Holland must have a cameo in it. Even if it's post-credits at the end of the movie, I just find it very difficult to make a Venom movie without mentioning Spider-Man or have it, because the characters are as interconnected as the Joker and Batman or Lex Luthor and Superman.
Yeah.
Or Magneto and the X-Men. It just feels like you have to have Spider-Man connected to this movie in some way.
And it's like if you've read the comics, you know that Venom comes to Earth because he piggybacks on J. Jonah Jameson's son, who's an astronaut. He's coming back down from the moon, and the symbiote is hitching a ride on the shuttle. And whenever it crashes, it's like the Rhino and the Shocker are trying to rob the shuttle whenever it does crash. I can see why if they are not in it, that's not a big deal. But it'd be cool to see Jonah Jameson, maybe Jameson's son, and then the symbiote, and then have that tie back into Spider-Man somehow.
Also in October, from the director of La La Land, his follow-up, you know, which is an award-winning movie, is First Man with Ryan Gosling. I saw this trailer in the theaters, strangely, a couple weeks ago with something I saw. And it looks kind of weird. Like, it's been a while since we've had a NASA movie telling the story of Neil Armstrong. But this movie looks like it's definitely going for more hardcore, heavy adult drama.
Okay.
Than it is, like, the Apollo 13 was more like, lift me up, you know, drama. This is more like what these men struggle to deal with the space program and everything. And a reason I talk about it is because it does kind of relate to things we talk about on the show. It's kind of science fiction. Well, it's real sci-fi.
Yeah, and that's probably better. I mean, I haven't seen this trailer, but, you know, if it's a modern-day version of Apollo 13, I'm all for it. You know, we need another space movie other than just having Interstellar or The Martian.
Yeah, and I know you're a fan. I'm not a huge fan, but in October, Halloween comes out. I've never been a fan of the Halloween movies. Just not really. I just didn't care for Mike Myers.
Yeah.
I always thought he was kind of a stupid slasher guy. I was more of a Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th guy. So this is another one of those legacy sequels. It's a sequel to the original. It takes place, you know, 30, 40 years later. The trailer did nothing for me. I'm just like, but I know people are excited.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it. And, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, it's good to see her back on the screen. I like her as an actress. Favorite performance obviously was True Lies. But one of the reasons I really like Halloween is because I wasn't supposed to watch it. And then when my parents were gone, you know, we had the VHS. And so I popped it in and I watched Halloween, and I was like, whoa, it was really my introduction to horror movies. Really was Halloween, as was a lot of people. John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yeah.
That was, that started a revelation of horror films.
So this is like back when you were ducking running. Back to an old episode, so you were ducking running. We'll stick around watching horror movies.
Probably before ducking running. Well, probably a little before, yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
You weren't ducking running at this age.
No, I didn't start that early.
So, yeah, hopefully, you know, people dig it. Hopefully they like it and it's good for them.
Isn't Creed supposed to come out after that?
We're getting to Creed.
Oh, okay.
I got on the list here, man.
All right.
Slow down, Frank.
I know, right?
Early November. We'll talk about this briefly, but I want to give it a mention because I am looking forward to his Bohemian Rhapsody. I think it looks fantastic.
Oh, hell yeah.
The story of Queen. It's not necessarily a movie that we remember talk about on Rebel Radio, but, man, Bohemian Rhapsody looks really fucking good.
It does.
Great trailer so far. That comes out November 2nd. Then, a couple weeks after that, is Creed 2. It's coming out. We have the girl in the Spider's Web, which is Girl in the Dragon Tattoo series. I know a lot of people are looking forward to that. But Creed 2, it comes out November 21st.
That's okay. That's right.
Which
November.
Is right after Fantastic Beasts 2, which we talked about Fantastic Beasts a bit on our Comic-Con show.
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't know. I just think Harry Potter's getting a little beaten to the ground. Just the trailer to me just wasn't that great. I wasn't a huge fan of the first Fantastic Beasts. I thought it was okay.
I think it has Dumbledore in it.
Yeah, this one brings Dumbledore in.
Yeah.
The first Fantastic Beasts was really good until like the end. It just, to me, the last 20 minutes of that movie just sort of fell down. It was okay. But I know there's a lot of big Harry Potter fans out there looking forward to this. So that comes out. But then right after that is Creed 2. And you know, when I first heard the idea of Creed 2 and he's fighting Drago's son, I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems kind of like pushing it, but then I saw the trailer and you see Drago's name on the robe and you're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, dude.
You
know? And it's like he just looks like a friggin' machine from the back. You just get that feeling that this guy's a machine like his dad.
Yeah.
And you know, Rocky having doubt and Creed not Creed. He's technically legally not Creed.
Right.
But Michael B. Jordan's
character. He earns the name in Creed, yeah. If anybody hasn't seen it. He didn't want to be known as Creed, so he was going by Adonis Johnson because he wanted to make a name for himself. But by the end of the movie, he fully earned being a Creed.
Mm-hmm. But it's definitely going to be, there's going to be a lot of elements in that film that I think are going to play out really well. And it looks like it might definitely be better than the first Creed and one of the best Rocky films.
Slow down there though. Ryan Coogler's not back to direct. And that's the one thing that scares me. He is executive producer, but Ryan Coogler, after doing Creed and Black Panther, it's going to be very difficult to top what he did. Cause I think Creed works so well because of Coogler. Mm-hmm. And that's why Black Panther works so well, is because Coogler is really good at bringing out the best in the individual characters. And that's what I loved about Black Panther. It wasn't just a superhero movie. You also really liked each character you're introduced
to. That's true.
So I'm hoping that it's as good as Creed 1. We'll see. Next, we have Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Oh, yeah. Wreck-It Ralph 2. We've been waiting for a Wreck-It Ralph sequel, I think, for a while. Maybe not as bad as we were waiting for a Mr. Incredible or an Incredibles movie sequel, but you know, I think a lot of people really liked Wreck-It Ralph, you know, and you know, the ending of that film, it left it open to where, you know, maybe we could re-enter that universe and we finally get to.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
It looks like a lot of fun.
Kids are going
to
love it.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with Disney. I've been looking forward to this. Wreck-It Ralph, I've said before, one of my favorite Disney movies the last several years. So I'm all over the sequel. And it comes out the same weekend as Creed 2. So might have to see one week, one the next.
Yeah.
But it's coming out. And then lastly, for our fall preview, we have Aquaman coming out December 14th. And I know they said there was an early press screening or early test screening, and people said it was good but not great. But I don't take much from those because it's only September, so people don't realize how much goes into a movie. That's 4 more months they have to re-edit the movie, do effect shots. That's a long way. They said the same thing about Rogue One. Early test screenings weren't good, and Rogue One turned out fantastic. So I don't take much from that. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. But I'll take good, not great, too, also for an Aquaman movie.
It's like if we're talking about, you know, that translating into ratings, you know, if great is like AA+, and this is more like B+ material, then that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, why do we have to kind of downplay it? You know, maybe that's more of the bad mojo that DC is getting for whatever reason. I think this is good news for DC films. I'm excited. This is going to probably be maybe not as good as Wonder Woman, but right up there.
I think it'll be good.
Yeah.
So that's what's coming out this fall, and a quick but efficient fall movie preview.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, we got it in there.
So what are we going to talk about next week, Matt?
We're going to talk about Blade.
You better wake up. The world you live in is just a sugar-coated topple. There is another world beneath it. The real world.
For thousands of years, they have existed among us.
You keep your eyes open. They're everywhere. Chances are you've seen them yourself and didn't know it.
A secret nation.
Our livelihood depends on our ability to blend in.
With a lust for power.
We should be ruling the humans. These people are our food.
They've got their claws into everything. Politics, finance, real estate.
There's a war going on out there.
He makes the weapons. I use them.
Now, One will lead them to conquer mankind.
Tonight, the age of man comes to an end.
We're gonna be gods.
And one will try to stop him dead.
There are worse things out tonight than vampires.
Like what?
Like me.
Half human.
Blade's mother was attacked by a vampire while she was pregnant.
Half immortal.
You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
He is their greatest fear and our only hope.
It's open season on all vampires.
Snipes, Steven Dorff.
You're one of them, aren't you?
No, I'm something else.
Blade.
Wesley Snipes' Blade, which just celebrated its 20th anniversary on August 21st from hitting theaters. And, you know, it's a cool flick.
It is.
You know, it's pre-Marvel Studios era, but a well-done movie. Not great, but a really well-done movie.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone talked about Black Panther being the first black superhero, but people forgot about Blade.
Hell, yeah.
But, man, all props to Wesley Snipes, even though he invaded taxes and did some wrong.
Yeah.
He still made a cool movie. And we are also going to have author Ashley Niemer on the show with us, talking her new book. And she's into vampires. So we were like, well, let's do a vampire movie. And I suggest to her, let's do Blade. And she's like, yeah, that's cool, you know. So she was down with it. So she's going to be on the show with us talking Blade. And we're going to talk about her and her new book that we have coming out. And or we have come out. She has coming
she
out.
She has coming out.
But I remember seeing Blade in theaters and thought it was a really cool flick. And I haven't watched it in a long time. So
yeah, kinda,
it should be cool to watch again. I remember Steven Dorff being a pretty badass in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember really great sword fights in it because I always like movies with good sword fights. So Blade should be a fun one to talk about next week. And we've always talked a lot of comic book stuff on Rebel Radio podcasts. So we try to cover the comic movies as much as we try to cover Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes.
So let's come back around with a comic movie and do Blade, the Vampire Hunter. You know, why didn't they call the movie Blade the Vampire Hunter? They just called it Blade.
I guess.
But then they should have called it Blade the Vampire Hunter. It would have been cool.
Well, like, kind of like Buffy the Vampire?
You know. I guess. Maybe that's why they, you know, it might be why they didn't do it.
Maybe.
Back then.
Like, that was about the time Buffy
was on TV, you know.
Yeah.
We'll have to find out when we do a research. So next week, tune in the Rebel Radio podcast and check out Blade with author Ashley Niemer on the show. But that's all we've got today. Make sure you go to rebelradiopodcast.com and check out all our episodes. Comics with Arnold is on there on our YouTube channel. Probably a new one this week. Is Arnold working on one? You talked to him lately?
I think he's working on one.
Okay, that sounds good, man. We don't want, you know, I don't want to make Arnold mad anymore. I don't want nasty voicemails from him like I got that one time. It was rough, man. I thought Arnold was going to like bust through the wall and kick my ass. But go on the rebelradiopodcast.com, check out all the stuff. I'm working on more content for the rebelradiopodcast.com because we don't want you to just go there just to check out a new episode. I'm hoping it's something you go out and check out two or three times a week and maybe stop and buy a t-shirt, donate some money on our PayPal. There's links on there for Entertainment Earth if you want to buy some of that new Funko cereal. They have an exclusive Batman. Hit those links and we get a little profit from the show. It helps us out on those Entertainment Earth links. And I'll stop selling stuff to you because we just appreciate you listening.
Yes, thank you.
We really do. But that stuff's there if you want to support the show more. And but as always, thank you for listening to Rebel Radio Podcast. Those listening on Ironic Radio, thank you too. And until next week when we talk Blade, have a good week, everybody. And as always, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And just go there and do it.
Hey, Headbangers. This is Rudy Sarzo, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Walter Simons. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?